Guarding moral purity. I must confess, on the way out through for a brief moment, I was pitting myself just a little bit. Why am I driving out here to talk on a subject that is difficult to talk about in a mixed setting? Will it do any good? Why am I going through this? But tonight, I greet you in the name of Jesus. And I hope we can stir up our pure minds tonight as we look at a difficult subject. Our title only has three words, but it leaves us with more than one implication. The first implication I see is that moral purity is in jeopardy and needs protection to survive. It won't just happen. The second is that purity is something that is worth protecting. It's worth guarding. Guarding has the idea of something that takes vigilance, something that takes preparedness. A guard is someone who thinks like the enemy might think and tries to be prepared for what the enemy might want to do. I believe tonight part of the reason for this assignment is to help us remember the value that purity is in society, in a society that is trifling with its worth. For most of us, value is determined by how much something is sought after. We tend to only guard the things that we want to keep, the things that are wanted badly. I remember down in Guatemala for a short time, it was just rather different for me to see a guard with a gun protecting a Coke truck. I just never thought of Coca-Cola as being something that you need to guard with a gun. But their economic conditions there made that something very valuable and wanted, so much so that it was heavily guarded. When we think of guarding purity because of its value, it is not because of its value to the masses. Purity is being sold very cheaply. Purity has very little value anymore in America. But it has big value to the enemy of our soul. Because if he can get us to give up in our purity, we've made an exchange that is going to take us from riches to rags. And the devil knows that. When we talk about guarding purity, sometimes we feel a bit embarrassed to do that. I remember a man in my shop years ago. He was a Mennonite truck driver from a rather liberal Mennonite setting. And as I was lettering his truck, he was standing there. We got to talking about many and various things. But one of the things I remembered that he said made an impression on me. He said, "The folks at church just don't understand why I can't go with them to the beach." He said, "I don't understand how they can go." He said, "I just can't go along." And he said it with, somehow, it just seemed like he felt like he must be weird. I said, "Well, I couldn't go along either." It was a bit of an embarrassment to him to have to so obviously admit that he is prone to failure and he can't go with the very people he goes to church with to places that they go. A sad reality in many churches today. The belief is that there must be something wrong with me if I can't do these things, if I can't go to the water slides, if I can't go to the beach, there must be something wrong with me. When we talk about purity, we are talking about something very valuable. Unfortunately, our American culture has robbed purity of its value because it left it unguarded. The price America is paying is huge. And I have huge with all capital letters and an exclamation point. Just today, we were talking in the shop. There are two chiropractors that live geographically close to our one location. The one I knew for many years, and we had many talks together. His wife divorced him and he remarried. The other one just moved into the area, a good friend of the one that I knew for many years. And we were suspicious that he also had apparently just gone through a divorce. So we asked the one that we were acquainted with if it's true that his friend has also went through a divorce. He said yes. He said it brought back many memories. He said we cried together. America is paying a huge price for laying aside purity. Men are crying. And yet, somehow or other, they just let the lifestyles go unguarded. The third implication that I see is that guarding is no small task, or we wouldn't spend a whole evening talking about it. It's something that is a daily battle, because we live in fallen bodies in a fallen world. And we are all wired with an inert attraction to sexual things. I'm told that every 90 minutes, our bodies in some way, shape, or form are giving us signals of some sort of physical desire. And we do not live on islands. We are bombarded with sights and sounds. The Bible clearly tells us that a look at nature is meant to expose us and draw our minds to a mighty Creator, and it does that. In fact, it does that to the point we zone out and we just have to admit that there's a master intelligence behind everything we're seeing. But the very thing that the Bible says is meant to draw our minds to God also evidences the master's designers in the plans of procreation. Nature follows the natural rhythms that God has put there and orchestrated, and it does so without restraint, oblivious of shame. Nature is so systematic that man builds its sports seasons around the animal rhythms, from hunting to fishing. And God placed mankind here with body rhythms and desires also meant to be a part of procreation and personal enjoyment. But God did not place man here to freely express and exhibit those desires at whim and will without restraint. God placed man here to guard purity. God placed man here as far superior to the animal kingdom. God placed man here with a soul that is going to live on and on forever and ever and face the consequences of his choices. God placed man here through Jesus Christ to overcome the allures of a fallen world while living in a fallen body. And in doing that, we bring honor and glory to God as we voluntarily say no to illegitimate passions, as we voluntarily say no to things so that we can guard our purity, things that the world is doing, things that even the church may be doing, but we can't do because we want to be master of our desires. Well, tonight, I'm aware that moral purity is a huge subject, and I haven't been in the ministry that long, but I've been in it long enough to know that the web of impurity spins in many directions and has many attached points and has many ways of captivating our hearts. Moral purity is challenged on many fronts. There are some of us here tonight that likely find it hard to imagine that some older person could have moral temptation in the presence of a small child. To even think of that, it evokes feelings of anger and disgust. But it is possible that there's someone here tonight that understands that temptation and needs to guard their heart. Maybe some of us cannot imagine feelings toward a genetic brother or sister or another close relative, especially one old enough to be our parent or young enough to be our child. To even consider incest as an option feels totally unnatural and wicked and anti-human. But maybe there's someone here that understands that temptation and needs to guard their heart. Likely, we find it hard to imagine that someone stooping so low as to have temptations toward an animal, Bestiality is off the charts of our comprehension. How anyone could stoop that low? Who would consider such an experience? But it's possible that someone needs to guard their heart. I'm sure most of us find it hard to imagine that special feelings towards someone of the same gender is a possibility. Homosexuality and lesbianism is repulsive. But there are some people that understand that struggle and need to guard their heart. There may be some here that can hardly fathom how someone could get themselves into a habit of self-abuse, how hygiene and bedtime can become a seedbed for fantasy. But there might be someone here that understands that struggle and needs to guard their heart. I would assume that most of us tonight fully understand the power of cross-gender attraction, the way of a man and a maid, that God-given desire, that is desire that is fully under God's blessing if handled according to his outline and done in the context of marriage. But we also know that even in the best of marriage relationships, our eyes are not closed. We live in a world of options. We choose what we want to see, and we choose what we want to dwell on. And maybe there's someone here tonight that needs to guard their heart. How do we guard moral purity? My first point tonight, to guard moral purity, we must be honest with our attraction grid. An unholy lust and attraction must be recognized as that, and no matter how seemingly strong it seems, we must be honest with who we are and where we are in our spiritual journey if we continue on the path we're on. I said tonight that there's some things that are highly unlikely. I mean, some things that are very contemptible for a spiritual mind to even consider as options. But the longer we go on a journey away from God, the more those things become options. And we have to be honest with where we are in our journey. And we have to get back on the basis of God's word and guard our purity. Any attraction outside of God's will must be labeled sin just as it is. It's not a bad habit. It's not a little weakness. It's not a slip. And any attraction that is inside of God's permissive will must be brought into obedience to Christian boundaries and principles in relation to its expression. We know tonight that God made lots of things beautiful. He made trees and landscapes. We can go through some valleys and be in awe at the combinations that are there. It's almost breathtaking sometimes. You're driving on that road, you know, the creek is running, and all those white birch trees, and then there's that couple pine trees nestled in, and we say, oh, that's beautiful. That is just beautiful. God made that. That's beautiful. It's a combination of elements that draws us in emotionally. It draws our minds to heaven. He made the opposite gender extremely beautiful and attractive in a uniquely different way. There are not too many of us that enjoy walking in the woods that are going to end up tree huggers. Now, maybe some hunters get pretty close to that when they climb their trees and are there for extended times. We won't go there. But that's probably as close as most of us will get to having a fascination with trees. But when we look on the opposite gender and the right elements are in place to match our attraction grid, we will eventually become a people hugger, if not physically, mentally. When we follow unwholesome attractions, we will end up in moral complications, first of all in our mind, and then many times in other ways. There are laws of attraction that every man and woman experiences that has a slippery slope. There are places that we cannot go if we're going to guard our purity and we understand our attraction grid. It may be slightly different for different individuals. Each of us can have our passions stirred by slightly different things or different combinations of things at any stage in life. I've heard older people share that they thought that it would get easier as they got older, only to discover the devil is with us at every stage of life. I heard a surprising confession of a grandma not too long ago. She emphatically stated that she would much rather be married to a skinny, bald-headed man than a fat, gray-haired man. Now, I discovered what her attraction grid is. I didn't start a survey business on that subject, but I would like to believe that there may be some ladies out there that would be happy to be the wife of a plump, gray-headed, full-haired man. We have different attraction grids. We like different things. There's different combinations of things that can stir something inside of us that we would like to call love, but many times it's lust. Outside of proper context, it is lust. No married woman can admire a man's beauty in a special way. No married man can admire the physical beauty of the opposite gender in a special way. And I want to insert that there is a difference between admire and notice. We can't help but notice, but we can keep from admiration. A huge key in victory in any area is to be honest with our temptations and to know our enemy. Because when we know our enemy, then we can guard. There are certain kinds of people that it would likely take me a long time to have feelings toward. They don't fit my grid. There's various combinations that don't fit my grid. But there are certain kinds of people that it takes a lot of guarding in my heart, because it does match my grid. It does match the things that could draw me in. Second point, we must be honest with the fact that relationships don't usually start out physically. Relationships don't start out physically. I like to turn to Matthew chapter 5 and read the words of Jesus here. A warning to each one of us. Matthew chapter 5, verse 27. Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, Thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you, that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. And if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee, for it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. And if thy right hand offend thee, cut it off and cast it from thee, for it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. We'll stop reading there. I do not believe that the real case that Jesus is making here is to get out the saw and the eye plucker and physically cut off. I think Jesus is trying to give us a very drastic picture to illustrate the seriousness of guarding our mind and what we choose to look at and what we choose to admire. And he is saying that what we look at and what we do with this body is going to have eternal consequences. And we better be ready to pay a guard and put him on duty in our areas of weakness. For some it's a hand, and some the eye, and some the feet. Jesus is saying here in plain English that if we choose to admire the physical beauty of someone other than our companion to the point that we have mental pictures of physical relationship and stirred emotions, we already have a relationship, and we better be honest with it. When this is happening in our mind, our moral purity is violated. And we need some serious help in guarding our heart. When we guard our heart, we realize that relationships don't start physically. They start in the mind. The mind has an insatiable desire to use the visual to stimulate the physical. And we are no match in and of ourselves against the powers of our senses, especially the eye gate. A lustful eye will never get its fill. I was at a convenience store a number of years ago. It was a restaurant and a convenience store all in the same building. And I had an appointment with the gentleman that owned it. And I was in for a rather long wait. And I was a bit disgusted and I was starting to pity myself. I wandered around the convenience store for a while, waiting till he was done with his other appointment. And finally, the person beside the counter said, "You can go over and sit over in the restaurant. I'll let you know when he's done." And I noticed while I was wandering around in that convenience store that there was a section of the store that was not fit for any Christian. I went over and I sat down over in the restaurant side. But where I was sitting, I could see people going in and out of the convenience store. And they didn't really notice me. There was a partial wall there. And I saw what looked to be a Mennonite man come in. He looked to be a fairly young married man. And I watched him. He walked over to the cooler and he got a soda. And he looked this way and he looked that way, just checking the turf. And he went down an aisle where I couldn't see, but I knew what was at the end of that aisle. And I was sitting there waiting. Suddenly there's something came over me. It was almost an audible voice from the Lord that said, "Howard, this is why you were delayed this morning. You're needed over in that aisle." And I took courage and I got up and I went. I wasn't sure what I was going to do. But I went over to the aisle and I saw this man in the section where no Christian should be, on his knees on the floor with a book in hand. I pretended shopping a little bit. I didn't know what to do. He looked up and eyed me up and down, and I soon left him know that I'm not interested in shopping, I'm interested in what he is doing. And he slowly put the book away. He went to the counter. I went back to my seat over in the restaurant. But somehow I felt uncomfortable. I felt like my job wasn't done yet. I went out the door, but to my dismay, I saw a truck going down the road. I delayed a little too long to have a talk with that man. But there I saw a man that didn't guard his purity. And somewhere there's likely a family that was paying a price. And he will pay a price if he didn't change his ways. Number three, we must be honest with the fact that technology has not convenienced the guarding of our heart. We must want a guarded heart. We live in a world that runs on technology in many and various ways, and it doesn't make it easier to guard our heart. We no longer have to take a walk to the corner grocery store and buy a soda to disguise our lustful engagements. Our horizons have become worldwide. Our speed of access to anything that we want has become unparalleled in history, I believe. I read somewhere that the seamen rejoiced when they developed instruments to read the stars to navigate ships. That was called a compass. Although a very big and crude instrument and time-consuming, it opened up a whole new world to them when they learned how to line this piece of metal up with the stars and where they are at sea. And I'm told in that era of time, they had a common saying, "He who is slave to the compass enjoys the freedom of the open seas." And I believe today we could say, he who is a slave to technology will have the freedom to indulge in an unguarded heart. We have instruments that can take us wherever we want to go. The compass has long been replaced. The big compass has long been replaced with something much more portable. Today, you don't even need to ask for directions to go anywhere. As long as you have an address, you're good to go, an address and a GPS. Today, we just push around on our touch screens and whatever we might have, iPods, Androids, laptops, you name it. We can navigate. We have steering wheels. We have wheels that hit the road. We have engines. We have things to get us from point A to point B quite rapidly. Each generation has had to sort through the technology breakthroughs and quagmire of their time. And today, we are in a technology explosion that makes the possibilities of the Tower of Babel pale when we really think of what all we can do and how fast we can do it. Our great-great-grandparents had to sort through the advantages and disadvantages of the telephone. Some Anabaptist groups said, no way are we having a contraption on our walls that you can just turn a crank and instantly be connected to someone and gossip when you should be working. No way are we going to allow that. Some said we're not going to let it in the house, but we will have it convenient enough that if we need it. Today we can make fun of the shanties at the end of the lane, but the Bible is still true when it said that every idle word that we speak will have to give an account. And the more we convenience ourselves, the more accountable we are in every way. I wonder what our great-great-grandparents would have said if they could have looked down through the corridors of time and saw us today. I mean, we're at a point where just one generation down can boggle the next generation. Technology is moving that fast. Even those of us who feel a bit adapt to technology get into the marvel stage really fast. We slide up to our desks, we push a few buttons, and we have a whole library in front of us. Some Anabaptists said, a horseless carriage that you don't have to hook up a horse, you just turn a crank and go roaring down the road, takes you anywhere you want to go, that's way too convenient. No, we're not going to go there. That will put us in too much temptation. That will make it too convenient to go to the bar. People will go places that they should not go. Were they right? Did the automobile open up new temptations? Yes, they were right. In this Bible school address, depending where I go, I pass adult signs. If I had to hook up a horse and a buggy, I'd probably never see those signs. We have to be honest. We are a people that is using technology. From an automobile to the stuff we carry in our pockets and have sitting on our desks, we have lots of opportunity to lose our purity if we're not going to guard our hearts. Let's not be a slave to technology. I believe if we're going to safeguard our purity, we need to think of technology as a tool and not a toy. We need to keep that mindset. I believe the cell phones should go on chargers overnight and not be with us in bed. I have lots of tools that I use during the day at work. I have X-Acto knives that do a wonderful job of cutting vinyl, but I don't take it to bed with me. I don't need it in bed. I need it for its intended purpose during the day. Number four, we must be honest with the fact that to guard our moral life, even in the pursuit of valid relationships, we need space and pause to come out right. And this one is directed more to our youth. Whether we are physically in each other's presence or connecting through technology, there are certain moral time bombs that we are playing with if there is no curfew in association and communication. We have it so convenient to be in touch all the time. All the time. All relationships need some space and some pause. It's the late and into the night and into the early morning conversations that can saturate common sense to the point it overflows in unguarded speech, texts, and conduct. We need curfews if we're going to have relationships develop solidly and purely. We need times of together, and then we need times of separation. Even the most relational people have a saturation point where their heart wants to get ahead of their head. We need to take the time to stop conversation and compartmentalize and give ourselves times to diffuse our emotional energy and to clear the air so judgment does not become clouded by emotion. The later the hour, the weaker our resistance on moral standards. There's a time, whether physically present or using some form of technology, that we say good night, we say goodbye. We go to bed and we let God help process our conversation and our emotions. And we get a good night's sleep and we give pause. The relationally adept can use the time to chatter to the point that it feels like we know each other and understand each other so well that it brings temptation. The less relationally adept are tempted to fill in the lulls in conversation with touch and things that are not meant for them at that time. We live in a world where unguarded hearts turn the cell phones into cameras, and they turn on the webcams, and they may not be in the best of appearance, and thoughts are stirred and emotions are stirred that God didn't mean to be stirred before marriage. There was a sign above a tomato stand that said, "Don't squeeze me till I'm yours." And I want to say to you young people, I don't know if there's any courting people here tonight or not, but God meant for you to enjoy courtship. But you need to guard your heart. Bedroom clothes are not dating clothes. The cell phone camera is not sanctified. The bedroom is not a studio for relationships. You need to guard your heart. Number 5, we must be honest with the fact that unguarded moral behavior has a conditioning effect on others. Marriage is honorable in all, the Bible says, and the bed undefiled. And as married people, that married couples do have liberties that God understands. But how those liberties are displayed in public is going to help others who don't have such liberties either guard their purity or give in. We're accountable. Many couples somehow don't seem to get it at first, that affection shown in public does not look the same to others as it feels to the couple. Married people have a huge part to play in helping others make it through morally. Now, I want to say that I don't think all show of affection is wrong, but being mushy and exploiting liberties around others is not doing our part to guard moral purity in the lives of others. Being a guard takes sacrifice. It takes vigilance. It takes common sense. And it makes sense to me that a married couple, among singles on a hike together or a volleyball game together or whatever, especially with courting couples along, that the married couple would not do everything they're allowed to do. They would not put temptation on the unmarried or the single. They would restrain from intimate shows of affection. Too much show of affection in public is a public license to question a possibility of dysfunction at home. A full gas tank does not need to stop at every possible gas station, but an empty one does. Number 6, we must be honest with the fact that we live in an informed society and delicate questions are a part of raising a family in purity. And this is a difficult one for us as parents. But we live in an informed society. Many a young man is on a moral journey. We have our children's ministries, which are wonderful things. But we need fathers that are there for our youth. Many a person is on a moral journey because they did not have a dad that explained what is appropriate activities at sleepovers and pool parties and such like. Or they didn't have a dad that asked them if they watched a TV when they slept overnight at that motel, or if they were on the internet, or if they were watching movies on that laptop. They didn't have a dad that taught them moral safety in enjoying the ocean. Let's not be ashamed to be different than the world. Let's not be ashamed to reserve our ocean times for the off-season times. And if we can't find a decently secluded area, let's not be ashamed to not go. Water is not a license to immodesty. We are to guard our heart. In conclusion, we dare not let down our guards on moral purity. Our children are being introduced to much more than we were. We are introduced to much more than our forefathers. But tonight, I'm not discouraged, because Jesus' promise is still true. Every temptation that we face, there is a way of escape, if we really want it. We just have to look hard to find that way of escape. We must put up our guards so as to not lead ourselves into temptation, but deliver ourselves from evil through the power of Christ. May the Lord bless.